100% born in the Appalachian Mountains and made in the USA, Timber Ninja Outdoors provides a range of mobile hunting options to accommodate diverse hunting preferences. Whether you prioritize comfort, lightweight design, or versatility, their two-panel and single-panel saddles collection has something for everyone. The Black Belt Nano is the lightest single-panel saddle available on the market, weighing in under a pound. The saddle is designed with the minimalist hunter in mind, focusing on lightweight functionality and breathability. One notable feature is the patent-pending magnetic stick clip system on the side, which allows for convenient transportation of sticks up the tree, as well as a built-in platform holder. The Nano saddle can be folded up to the size of a Nalgene bottle, enabling easy portability. With a four-way stretch material on the back for a comfortable fit, as well as strategically placed padding for hip pinch relief, you can use code EASTMEETSWEST to get free shipping on any Timber Ninja order. If you try it out and don't like it, send it back within 30 days for a full refund. Learn more at TimberNinjaOutdoors.com and sign up for their email newsletter for exclusive discounts and product drops.
Are you an adventurer looking to take your hunt to the next level? Then you're in the right place. Welcome to East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the East Meets West Hunt podcast, Mountain Buck Q&A edition, brought to you by Timber Ninja Outdoors. So the way this podcast works is this is a different show than the normal show that I have that comes out on Wednesdays. This episode is short, sweet, to the point, and answering your questions that you send in to be able to just kind of keep it 10 to 20 minutes. Trying to answer questions that you have. Up until this point, I've been taking questions that have really, I've gotten a bunch of the same question and trying to utilize those ones as we're going out here. But if you have any questions, I'd love to be able to answer them. So there's two ways that you can submit questions. So you can either send them in to bo@eastmeetswesthunt.com to my email there. Make sure you put in the subject line, Mountain Buck Q&A. Then I can categorize them and go through these questions. The other way is to leave a comment on the YouTube version of this Q&A episode and be able to answer them that way as well. So I want to get right into this episode here and talk about the question of the week. And as I said, sometimes I'll do multiple questions. Sometimes it'll just be one. And this one is just going to be one question, but there's a lot to unpack with this one. So the question is, do you prefer creek bottoms, ridge tops, or side hills? And basically, I'd gotten some different questions from you guys. Some were asking about creek bottoms, some were about ridge tops. When do you hunt them? And then I also threw side hills in there too, because I think it's relevant to this question. So I've kind of combined it into one question that I feel like that I have some experience in to be able to answer here. So the first thing that I consider when I'm looking at the different terrain levels, especially in areas that are hill country or mountains, is the hunting pressure. So where is hunting pressure coming from in this place? And this goes back to a couple weeks ago, I did the Q&A on breaking down an area, and it's similar. I mean, but I'm looking at the road systems. When I'm doing that analysis before I go in, I'm looking at where's that hunting pressure coming from. I found different areas, different states tend to have some sort of a correlation to either a lot of the roads being on the tops or a lot of the roads being in the bottoms. Sometimes you have some side hill roads too. That's definitely a possibility. But a lot of times you have a trend of either top or bottom or both. And then that alone can help you kind of figure out where the deer are probably going to be at based off of that, or at least where you can get away from people and hunt a little bit less pressured deer. So I want to consider that. The next thing is food sources. And honestly, this is probably equally as important as hunting pressure, especially in areas where you have oak trees. So oak trees or any sort of mass crop, whatever it is that could be dropping, sometimes you'll have it where the top of the ridges are absolutely littered with it. Sometimes you might not have any acorns, and maybe down lower you have some cherries, you have some beech nuts, you have some other things that might shift that movement and where those deer are going to be at. And that's really important. I found that to be something that I've noticed from year to year, things changing, and why sometimes you might think, oh, my historical data, these deer just do whatever. A lot of times they do kind of just do things that are unexplained, but there's also some explanation behind it based on where the food is for that year. The other thing is the time of year. Okay, so the time of year is important, because early season versus the rut, a lot of times I might hunt the same area, but different areas within that area. So say, for example, we have acorns that are up higher, maybe on some flats of these finger ridges, and I'm assuming that these bucks are bedding off of these points and coming up to it. Rarely at that point am I going to be hunting in the bottom, because it's going to be some smaller movement. The deer aren't traveling as far, essentially. So I may be up a little bit higher in the ridges at that point, or maybe at kind of a side hill type portion, not completely on the top, but definitely not down the bottom during that time period. But then when it comes to rut, it's like, okay, I know deer are traveling from these different points. Where are they crossing at, and where are they doing that? And a lot of times you can find those areas in the bottoms. I mean, I love scouting bottoms because you can see more sign. It's wetter down there. The sign is more exaggerated in the bottoms. And I feel like it's been super popular to say that creek bottoms are nighttime areas in movement. And I could not disagree anymore with that thought process. Now, sometimes it can be. There's areas I've found that definitely have that, but it really comes down to the time of year. And I feel like during the rut, creek bottoms can be a super useful tool to be able to do that. And I'll give you some examples on why I think that here in a couple minutes. But really, I'm looking at those different levels, and a lot of it based on food and pressure. And then the next thing is how the wind and thermals are going to interact. One way that you can completely cross bottoms off from an area to actually be set up and hunting is when you get really steep valleys that come down almost to a point, and there might be like a ditch that's running up, and that's considered the bottom. Well, at that point, you're having a lot of these, you know, these thermals that are pulling down and just creating a toilet bowl effect, and not being able to hunt it, or you're just getting so much swirling going on that it's really, really difficult to be able to hunt, and you're just relying on a lot of luck at that point to get away with hunting some of those areas. So in areas like that, I might still find that sign in the bottom, but I might hop up a bench or two and hunt a little bit higher where I can get more consistent wind and thermals to be able to go through there. The next question that I ask is around access. How can I get into this spot without being undetected? Now, sometimes there might be the perfect setup to be able to hunt a creek bottom, but if you got a drop in there in the morning and the only access is from the top, you're going to blow everything out as you're heading down into that spot. Your best way of doing it is kind of straight lining it straight down versus side hilling or doing something where you're constantly throwing scent down over the hill. But that's just an example of why I think access needs to be looked at when you're finding your spot, because I've found so many great spots that I just haven't been able to hunt because I can't access them without blowing deer out. And that's just from experience of having them show up on camera, going in there and not seeing anything. I'm thinking that there's a lot of that comes down to my presence that alerted those deer to not be there. So kind of a little bit, to give some stories behind this and some examples. Have you ever wanted to have Levi Morgan, Andy May, Johnny Stewart, and others available at all times? Well, you can with Cyber Scout from Spartan Forge. Cyber Scout is like the ChatGPT for outdoors men and women. You can ask it any questions related to bow building, scouting, hunting, survival, and a whole lot more. I think you'll be impressed with how it responds. Cyber Scout is currently out now for a select group of early beta testers and will be available to the rest of you really soon. The entire app is a complete tool for planning your hunt with incredible aerial imagery mapping, journaling, deer prediction, and some of the most accurate and detailed weather data. Use the code EASTMEETSWEST to save 20%. And if you're still on the fence, give the 14-day free trial a chance at SpartanForge.ai. Let's talk about the creek bottoms here first, because I've kind of spent a little bit of time on that. But I've killed four of my last five Pennsylvania bucks in a creek bottom. But it's been kind of strategic based on the location. So out of those four, what was it? Two of them were during the rut. One of them was early season, and one of them was late season, well, gun season. So the early season setup, I really don't hunt bottoms a lot during the early season, but this spot just set up good for it. It wasn't like giant mountains that were there or anything. There was some decent elevation there, but what I had learned from camera data was that the bucks were crossing this point and kind of coming to, like, paralleling the creek for a short period of time before they went up on the next point to be able to bed. At least that's what I thought at the time. I actually think afterwards, I learned after I killed this deer that I think he was actually bedding in the bottom in a patch of, right on the edge of a patch of goldenrod. Since it was early in the season, the goldenrods were still standing tall. It was actually close to where some access was, where I had walked past, and I'm sure others have. And I think that deer is just laying there knowing he could see us and we couldn't see him. But nonetheless, that was the scenario for that spot, and that they were kind of coming through there and bedding on a different ridge than where I believe that he was feeding it. I have no confirmation that he was feeding there. That's just based off of assumption. And as you'll learn, if you're new to hunting the big woods or hunting the mountains, you have to put a lot of assumption into things. It's really hard to completely know. I do my best to know as much as I can, but a lot of it comes down to educated guesses and trial and error with it for me personally. Now, the rut spots, I like to find areas where there's a crossing and also trails that run parallel to that. If there's a big community scrape there, that's even better. But the different spots that I've had that where I'd killed some of these deer during the rut was the two that I'd killed. One of them was on the edge of a beaver pond. So most of the day I was set up right on the creek bank, and thermals would pull down along that stream and it hit that beaver pond behind me and it would rise then. Because the air in that, or the water in the pond, was actually warmer than the ambient air temperature, especially in the mornings, that would lift up. So I felt like it was kind of a bulletproof setup, and that buck skirted around the beaver pond, came right through, gave me a 37-yard shot, and I was able to kill that deer, 5.5-year-old buck. And then the other example of the rut spot was in a thermal hub. So I was in the bottom of a thermal hub, where basically a bunch of ridge points came out and some draws ran out and they met at this one point. And there's been a scrape at this location for at least 15 years that I know of. And it's just a historical spot every year that they travel through there during the rut. And really, as I'm just thinking about this now, all three of those examples, I was set up right on the stream bank where it helped me with wind in that bottom. And they weren't super tight bottoms to the point where you're getting a lot of swirling. You'd get some swirling throughout the day, don't get me wrong, but I didn't believe that deer were bedded nearby, so I didn't really care about that. And especially, you know, that last hour or so of light, everything calms down, you really get a downward thermal pull. But as you get some higher wind speeds, then that tends to change that up a little bit. So higher wind speed days, I typically stay out of bottom. So that's an example of where I'd want to go up the hill a little bit more, because higher wind speeds causes more swirling when you have all of that stuff that's impacting in that bottom specifically. Now, the last buck I killed in a bottom was in rifle season, and that was in 2018, I believe. And that deer was he was bedded down in the bottom during gun season. You could hear people putting deer drives on the opposite hill. it was about 2.25 miles from the road to be able to get into this location. And I'd found that there was a bunch of blowdowns in the bottom of this kind of hub system, and bucks would bed in there. And I just was just still hunting along this ridge, and I think I saw a deer first, and it looked like there was a doe getting bumped around. I dumped the bleak can once, and he came running right up. I was probably, I don't know, 20 feet above the bottom on this little tiny bench that wrapped around, and I shot him as he was down in there. So that was another example of a spot that was like that. So that's one of the reasons why that I have liked bottoms, but they don't work everywhere. So I'm just, because I've had this success, like, you have to check it for yourself. Carrying milkweed, the wind is your biggest enemy when you're in these bottoms, and being able to look at that. So that's an example of that. And now another example I have is an area I hunted in 2019, littered with oaks. There was acorns everywhere. The year prior, in 2018, I was in there in March of 2019, found some big sheds. There was just acorns everywhere. The top had so much sign, big rubs, everything. I was hunting that upper third of the hill, and it took me way too long of driving, you know, I think it was like an hour and 15 minute drive after work that I would go out just for an evening hunt and scouting. And I was like, I didn't even get a single picture on some of my cameras of any deer. And it was like completely different than the year prior. And it took me too long to go and start venturing down lower. And I dropped about 600 or 700 feet elevation gain in that lower quarter of the mountain. Had black cherries and beech nuts dropping, and the sign was all there. The deer didn't vacate the area. They just kind of moved, and they were bedding lower on some lower bedding points versus up higher. So that's when I'm looking at creek bottoms, ridge tops, side hills, all those different things. Now it comes down to those things. So hunting pressure, time of year, food sources, and wind and thermals. That's the basics that it kind of comes down to, and how I'm making a decision on where I'm going to hunt. If you like this episode, I appreciate it. If you would, share it with your friends, give it a rating and review wherever you listen to it, leave a comment, subscribe to the YouTube channel, whatever. All that stuff helps out so much. And I appreciate you sending in your questions, and would love to be able to answer them on a future episode. Good luck the rest of this season.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit eastmeetswesthunt.com, Facebook at East Meets West Outdoors, and Instagram at East Meets West Hunt. If you enjoyed today's episode, please review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.